It's to the best of our knowledge. I'm Anne Strainchamps. This hour, we're exploring the heart of darkness, our human propensity for violence. And this has been a pretty depressing hour so far. The underlying message seems to be that the world is a dangerous place and other people will hurt you. And we're surrounded by those stories, right? They're in the news all the time. But historian Steven Pinker told Steve Paulson that the truth is, no matter what you hear in the news, we humans are actually becoming less violent.
In terms of reducing day-to-day violence, both the insult that escalates into a lethal quarrel or the raiding of a neighboring village to abduct the women and kill the men, that has been driven down by the control of government. When you've got a third party that wants to keep the peace within its kingdom, not for any particularly benevolent reasons, but just because violence among citizens is kind of a nuisance to a king who'd rather keep them alive to supply him with taxes and soldiers. But that pacification of a population will drive violence down. And then as a government evolves to a more democratic form, you have the government acting as a third-party dispute resolver through the court system and laws. And instead of having to defend your interests the way the Corleones did by the threat of violence carried out to make it credible, you call the police, you file a lawsuit, and that results in fewer bodies on the floor.
So you're saying it's partly the rise of the nation state. This has contributed to the decline of violence.
Certainly the rise of the state. Yes, states and empires, not necessarily nation states. But the rise of government tends to reduce the rate of lethal quarreling among its citizens. There's also the rise of instruments of commerce, money, contracts, interest, technologies of trade like roads and canals that make it more valuable to buy and sell what you want than to plunder it. And there are a number of reasons to think that the rise of commerce has led to a decline in warfare and violence. Also, I think the rise of education and literacy and cosmopolitanism and knowledge and open free speech have tended to drive down forms of institutionalized violence, partly because people get into the habit of seeing the world from other people's point of view. And the rise of a general intellectual attitude towards social practices. Can we justify what we're doing, or do we have to defend it in argument? And do the people in power have to defend what they do? When you start to have widespread literacy, a free press, people will start to question whether slavery can really be justified or mutilating people as a form of punishment.
Okay. You've mentioned a whole bunch of things here, and I want to sort of pick up a few of them. Coming back to the state, the government, which now often has more power than it used to in previous years, it seems that you could make a different argument, which is that with the rise of the nation state, it is actually much easier to engineer mass killings. Nazi extermination of the Jews or Chairman Mao's eradication of his political enemies during the Cultural Revolution. In other words, maybe there are less frequent violent outbursts, but when they do happen, they're deadlier.
They can be, although it's misleading. If you're talking about the effect of government as a whole over the course of history, and there have been thousands of them, to pick the two or three worst ones gives you a misleading picture of the role of government in general compared to anarchy.
It seems that there is a profound philosophical question at the heart of this, and that is whether we become better human beings, better in terms of being more compassionate, because of our powers of reason, of sort of, you know, coming up with rational underpinnings for moral codes, or whether we act kindly towards other people for more emotional reasons, perhaps because we have been led to think this way through religious upbringing.
You're right that there is an interesting back and forth between the head and the heart, if you will. That is, do we refrain from cruel and destructive practices because we have compassion and empathy for the victims, or because we have a commitment to ideas like universal human rights that don't justify or don't permit the exploitation of other living things? It's very hard to know which came first, but I do think they go back and forth and they can reinforce each other. I don't think it can just be empathy, because quite frankly, I don't think that anyone can literally feel the pain of everyone else on Earth. Maybe I'm a bad person, but I just don't spend that many hours of the day imagining what it's like to be a starving person in South Asia or a victim of war in Africa. On the other hand, I firmly believe that anything that we can do to alleviate hunger and war ought to be implemented. I think that there's no other position can be defended morally, and I'm willing to put it into practice in terms of support for policies, charitable donations. Historically, you see moralistic arguments like how awful it was to be a slave and have a child pulled out of his mother's arms by a cruel slaveholder. But you can also have arguments saying, what right does one person have to own another person? I think they've both been influential. If anything, I would tend to put my bets on the intellectual side, the power of ideas, that one often sees in the history of the abolition of barbaric practices, that it started with briefs from philosophers of the day that then went viral. The pamphlets were distributed, the books sold out, they were translated into every other European language. They were the subject of arguments in the coffee houses and bars and salons and dinner tables, and eventually influenced the decision makers. They probably needed a push of compassion, of sympathetic imagination. What is it like to be an animal who is mistreated? What is it like to be a slave? But the ideas definitely had a huge, powerful influence.
Are you saying humanity is making moral progress? I mean, we're basically becoming better as a species?
Yeah, not that we're, I don't think we've become biologically any better. I don't think that this is a case of Darwinian evolution. But I think our collective global culture has been moving in that direction.
And to speculate into the future then, I mean, if you are right and we are becoming kinder, more compassionate, do you think our moral codes will develop even further?
I suspect they will in many directions. I think that our treatment of farm animals is going to improve. I think that violence against women and children worldwide is going to get better now that it's the target both of shaming campaigns from above and grassroots pressure from below. I think the tolerance of despots and brutal dictators is going to lessen. I think the idea of war between developed countries, which is already pretty much on the way out, is going to become consolidated. That still leaves a number of forms of violence that could still occur. There could still be civil wars. There could still be terrorism. There could still be crime. But to the extent that we can control things by our own decisions, such as the treatment of farm animals, I think that the humanitarian currents will continue.
Steven Pinker. If you want to know more about his argument, we recommend his book, The Better Angels of Our Nature, Why Violence Has Declined. Steve Paulson talked with him.